Hello and welcome to Beatdown, a musical battle royale. I am one of your hosts, writer, podcaster, and code monkey, the artist formerly known as High Tech Elvis, Josh Brunell, and joining me on the panel tonight. She's a booker, she's a baker, she's a literal candlestick maker. That's right, she made all the candles at our wedding. It's Jennifer Lane, everybody. Good evening, Jennifer.
Good evening, Josh.
Also joining us, he's a writer, he's a chemist, and he's shining down everywhere except when the lightning strikes. He's Edward Giordano. Good evening, Ed.
Good evening, Jen.
Finally, last but not least, in our fourth chair, she's a crafting queen, an X-Files file, and the co-host of the Mulder It's Us podcast. It's Candace Bartlett. Good evening, Candace.
Hello.
I was going to make a joke like, and sweeter than any candy bar, but
it's been done.
Yeah. It's probably been there, done that. But yes, thank you for joining us tonight, Candace. You hosted the Mulder It's Us podcast with Jennifer.
Yes, thank you for having
me. Where you guys discussed
the
10th season of X-Files. What was the takeaway on the 10th season of X-Files?
It was an emotional roller coaster. It was intense. Good intense, but kind of exhausting.
Yes. So much good, but just frustrating sifting through all of the noise.
Yeah, it was very 50-50, though. It's like, I love this, I hate this every week.
And I think that people... It's been so long, people don't remember what the show actually was. Because the complaints they were making, they would have been making about the original, or the, you know, the first nine seasons, if they remembered.
Right.
Anyhow.
I rewatched the show very recently for the first time, actually. So it wasn't even a rewatch. It was watching it for the first time. And I watched it along with the Intro to X podcast, which... oh, gosh, I wonder if they listen. I really did love that podcast. But so they were watching like one episode at a time. But it really was like watching those first two seasons being like, this did not age super well. There's a lot of charm to it. And if you were coming into it with like a bunch of 90s based nostalgia, I could see it really working. But yeah, the X-Files, I do think it's one of those things that it's not exactly what people remember it being.
Mm-hmm.
As an
outsider, my takeaway from X-Files was that it was profitable.
definitely that.
For sure.
For
everyone
involved.
That is not wrong, yeah.
Well, what's that, Ed?
Like, that's my dough. I never watched the show ever, so I'm...
Well, this week, in honor of the upcoming Grammys telecast, which is just a couple weeks away, our theme is Songs of the Year. So that's songs that won Song of the Year at the Grammys. But before we get to that, we have to talk about last week. Our theme last week was songs about beginnings. Ed brought Little Victories by the Blue Sky Riders. Jennifer brought Home Again by Michael Kiwanuka. And it was I who reigned supreme in week one, round one.
I want to recount.
I don't want to recount, but I will say...
I'm kidding.
The fact that I walked away with 25% of the vote, I was very happy with that. I thought that was a respectable number.
So yes, I did pull it up specifically on the Twitter. On the Twitter poll, I got 62% of the vote. Ed got 23, and Jennifer got 15. And then there were a couple additional Twitter votes where people wrote, "I'm with Josh," and Tiffany gave a great hashtag Team Josh,
yes,
which was pretty. Or I think it was actually Team Nina, but I'm going to go ahead and take credit for it.
Yeah.
So Nina Simone reigned supreme in Songs About Beginnings. Candace, you did listen to the show. Where would you have voted on the Song About Beginnings?
Okay. Truthfully, Nina Simone.
Of course. I mean, that was my first choice, too.
Right.
And then Josh was like, oh, here's my song. And I'm like, what?
Now, I will say, of all the songs from last week, though, the one I actually found myself humming the most was Ed's song.
Okay.
Like, because I listened to that episode because it was our first episode. I wanted to be perfect. I spent a lot of time on it. I've spent the most of my time actually humming Little Victory. So, Ed, I think you really brought it last week. I was impressed.
Thank you. I think all of our songs are really solid, and I'm excited about the prospects of this podcast in more ways than one.
And you know what? I'm happy with my 15% results, and if that means that, you know, 15% of our podcast listeners now know about Michael Kiwanuka, I'm so happy.
There we go. That's my little victory.
Oh, Jennifer, bringing it back.
100% of our audience knows about it. They were just guilted into picking Nina Simone.
Guilted. I did use the civil rights card.
Or something. I don't know what it was.
I mean, he did have two pages of typed notes. I had mine on an index card, so.
Well, you guys aren't even prepared for the emotional blackmail I'm going to use this week on you.
Oh, I can only imagine, though. Like, I can see.
Because we are gathered here to talk about the Grammys, let's talk a little bit about the Grammys. I'm not a big Grammy fan myself. I'm not a big watcher of award shows. And I found looking back at past winners about the Grammys was a kind of a fascinating experience of, like, I found all of our picks this week are kind of down-tempo. And really everything in the Grammys seemed to be down tempo. Like, the awards were all extremely down tempo. And you could kind of tell going year to year of the winners, like, oh, this was the George Bush comment year. And oh, this was the year that we were going to talk about civil rights. And I found that, like, it was kind of more of a statement on the year than on the actual best song. Ed, I know you have some deep thoughts about the Grammys. What do you think?
You are right that it does lean towards down-tempo songs. I feel like when you're, because Song of the Year is just for lyrics and melody, and I like when you're just doing that, you just have, in a down-tempo song, you have like more room for that. But I think there's like some standouts that aren't necessarily down-tempo. Single Ladies, I'm like, is that really deserving a Song of the Year?
Well, that didn't win Song of the Year, though. That won Record of the Year.
No, it won Song of the Year.
I'm literally looking at the page. I am super surprised. I didn't notice Single Ladies winning.
And Single Ladies,
yeah, 2010.
And then also Smooth, Rob Thomas, and Hannah.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Song of the Year, and that's like an up-tempo song. So there are some places. And then, of course, if you go back to the beginning, you're like, oh, I don't know why they cover the song on American Idol all the time. And then you're like, oh, well, it did win Song of the Year. Maybe a thing to that.
I was also kind of fascinated by, like, Always on My Mind, which I think is a fantastic song. But it won in, like, 82 for the Willie Nelson version. Mm-hmm. But it was actually, or 72. It was written, like, 15 years earlier.
83.
And it was written so many years earlier. And was, like, you know, was recorded by Elvis Presley in the 70s and things. And so it was fascinating to think, for a writer's award, that it didn't actually get picked up until the Willie Nelson version in 83. Candace, what are your thoughts on the Grammys? Do you watch it every year?
I don't. And I'm super into awards shows. More so, I think I had a period in life where I stopped watching them, and then TiVo became a thing. And I was like, oh, I can do this again because I can watch a 3-hour show in 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it became worth it. I don't typically watch the Grammys or like the American Music Awards. I, of course, used to watch the MTV Awards, but not even that so much anymore.
Yeah. And the MTV Awards, aren't they more for the actual video, or they do video and song and album?
Well, the video awards did give awards for music and like the best song of the year and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I don't even watch that anymore. So I don't know what that says about me. I think it's the awards. I think it's so broad that everyone is kind of into their own certain kind of music, and sitting there for so many hours and watching all of these things that you don't know anything about, you've never heard of, you don't care about. I think maybe that's why I'm not so interested. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, thoughts on the Grammys?
I actually never watched them. And I mean, it became one of those things that people would talk about certain performances, and yes, I'd look it up and I'd watch the, you know, the YouTube of it online the next day. But that's really it. I was always more into, you know, the Oscars, the Golden Globes, the Emmys, so the, you know, movies in theater. So, it's kind of funny, because like even now, I really enjoy the Tonys more than I enjoy the Oscars. Mm-hmm. Like it's kind of shifting for me. But yeah, I think what you're saying, Candy, about the, you know, the broad scope of the musical acts that are included in the Grammys, it's just, it's too much.
Yeah.
I mean, it's too much for me. But
I mean, I think if I was in the industry, it wouldn't be too much for me.
Yeah.
In Land. It's the only award show that I watch and that I like really pay attention to. And I'm like really, I was really excited that my favorite composer got nominated for classical music a Grammy. I was like, oh, Mason Bates, I love you. Of course, it's like for his worst album, in my opinion, but whatever. So.
Now, Ed, you specifically said song of the year and not recording of the year, or not record of the year, not album of the year, not artist of the year. So I'm curious, why did you specifically want to talk about song of the year?
Year is record of the year is based on production, and song of the year is based on lyrics. And I guess I wanted to have a lyrics battle, I guess.
All right.
All right.
I like that.
That's what happened. I don't know if I'm confident about my choice because I made my choice very, like, without even thinking about, without even looking at the list I made, because I just knew that my choice had won, and then I went back, and I thought about changing it, but I was like, well, I committed.
Yeah, you made your choice this week on the, like, immediately after finishing the podcast last week. So let's go ahead and just, let's get into it. So as we mentioned, the theme this week is Songs of the Year, specifically songs that have won Song of the Year at the Grammys. So a little bit of background, the Grammys were started in 1959 by the Recording Academy to recognize outstanding achievement in the music industry. This is a fun fact. It was actually a spinoff of the Hollywood Walk of Fame. The company, or the guys that were putting together the Hollywood Walk of Fame, had so many recording artists like left over, and they were like, we should do an Oscars for music. And so that's how they came out with the Grammys. Wow. They were the award. They were originally called the Gramophone Awards, which is why the statue is a gramophone, which is how they became Grammys. I always wondered that. That's a big thing. And as Ed mentioned before, whereas the Album of the Year is awarded to the performer and the producer, the Record of the Year is awarded to the performer and the production team. Song of the Year is a writer's award. It is awarded to the writer and composer of the song. And so let's get into it. I won last week, which means I have to go first. And in so doing, let's talk a little bit about Simon and Garfunkel. Now, Simon and Garfunkel, there's like so many things I can't defend about them. I mean, they're real cheesy at times. They definitely are real emblematic of like a certain kind of popularist folk music. That said, Paul Simon wrote some awesome songs. I mean, he just wrote some like just some songs that were like unabashedly one thing or another. If he was writing about love, it was an unabashed love song. If he was writing about being an immigrant in the States, it was an unabashed song about the immigrant experience. If he was writing about a boxer, I still have not figured out what that one's about. Mm-hmm. When he was writing about his dog, it was a pretty unabashed love song to his dog, even though we all thought it was about a girl named Cecilia. Anyway, this is my song this week is Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Waters. Bridge Over Troubled Waters, it was released in 1970. It was actually the last song that they recorded. It's kind of, you could almost tell the story that this was the death of the band, was Bridge Over Troubled Waters. Paul Simon wrote it very quickly. He was never 100% happy with it. And you can hear that in the lyrics. I think it is such just like, I don't want to call it a first draft song as much as lyrically, Bridge Over Troubled Waters is a guy saying exactly what he's on his mind in the most straight ahead, like just there's no filter on what he's trying to come across, you know? So you have lyrics right off the top, like when you're weary and feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I'll dry them all. It's not even the best line, and it's not even the best rhyme you've ever heard. And yet it's so impactful. And the amazing kind of gospel moments of it and the big chorus, a huge pinnacle at the end of this song. It was recorded by the Wrecking Crew, which is like the Wall of Sound guys. And it is such a fantastic encapsulation, I think, of folk music in the late 60s. And I picked out a bunch of songs to bring today, and I started listening through them one by one. And as soon as I got to Bridge Over Troubled Waters, I went, okay, yeah, I got to talk about Bridge Over Troubled Waters.
When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I will dry. I'm on your side.
So now I have to play my huge emotional blackmail card on Bridge Over Troubled Waters. Bridge Over Troubled Waters is my parents' wedding song.
Oh,
I have heard this song 7 million times, and it has never, ever gotten old to me. Bridge Over Troubled Waters is, on the one hand, like, so symbolic of my parents' relationship and so symbolic of, like, what it was like to grow up in kind of the madness that was my home in the 80s. And then the grand irony, which is a joke my family has actually taken some affection in telling, is that Bridge Over Troubled Waters is also kind of a challenge where it's like, let's see how bad things can get. You still gonna go? You still gonna be there for each other? Like,
yeah.
Are you still gonna lay yourself down? Because I got some new tricks for you. Like, the world is always gonna find new tricks. And so in that way, I think that's also kind of the power of the song to me, is that it really is a moment where it's like the world is always going to find new tricks, and they're, if you're lucky, is going to be someone or something that's always there for you, that it will be the thing that keeps you up, that will keep you from falling into terribleness. So that is my vote this week, Bridge Over Troubled Waters. Anybody have any thoughts on that one?
None that are nice.
Go on.
Well, I did have a moment when you were playing it where I was like, I am straight up falling asleep right now. But now, since you laid the guilt card on me, now I feel like a big jerk for thinking about the fact that I'm falling asleep.
I mean, we didn't really get to the big hook at the end, though. True, like, the big emotional, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Jennifer, Bridge Over Troubled Waters?
I mean, I have seen them perform this live within the last 10 years. No, within the last 15 years. His voice holds up. Doesn't quite get that, you know, that last high note at the end, but it's a beautiful song. I've always loved this song. It's always, to me, been very hopeful and romantic, and, you know, you dream someday of having somebody in your life that will promise all of those things to you and actually deliver on them. And it was yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful song, and his voice, like, never sounded as good as it did back then.
That's true. I mean, I would say that's probably the best Art Garfunkel ever sounded.
Ever. Yeah.
And why I say, like, it's the story behind it, it's kind of the last, that what broke them up. Like, symbolically, it's kind of what broke them up, because Paul Simon really wanted Art Garfunkel to do the whole vocal, and Garfunkel was like, well, you wrote the song, like, you really should do the vocal. And Paul Simon was like, no, it'll sound better if you did it. And then he did it. And then later, when it became a huge hit and they won all these awards, they won Song of the Year and Record of the year it came out, Paul Simon was like, well, I shouldn't have done that. Because now he's like, I didn't even sing on my biggest hit. And he says they do it live, and he just sits on the edge of the stage and goes, well, this is stupid. which is also a very Paul Simon thing. If you know anything about him, he's never made a decision he didn't regret. That's pretty emblematic of who he is as a person.
I see why you like him now.
What's that, Ed?
Sorry.
I said, I wish I could be so, like, successful with the decisions that I regret. That's brilliant.
Yeah, right.
Ed, do you have any responses to Bridge Over Troubled Waters?
I think what makes it a strong choice from my city of the lyrics, and, like Hollywood has the ability to, like, suck the authenticity out of you, and, like, just having that, like, people are naturally attracted to that, and I think that is a strong point with your song.
I agree. I mean, I like the authenticity, the, like, just pure emotion that he's going for, and also the specificity of it I find is kind of fascinating, except for the last verse, which apparently even Paul Simon doesn't like, the whole Ceylon Silver Girl thing, which apparently was about his girlfriend's gray hair, which is kind of odd. But but I just, you know, there's just something so pure about, like, I will be your bridge over troubled waters. I will lay me down. So,
I mean, it has to be the simplicity that really resonated, that made it, like, the resounding hit on American Idol reality shows with gospel choirs to this day.
Yeah.
Well, not American Idol anymore, but The Voice. Like, it's because of that simple connection that's instantly identifiable and just, like, it's a moment song. Everyone needs a good moment song.
That is true. It's also one of the most performed songs ever. And Rolling Stone ranked it, I think, number 48 on their 500 best songs ever written. So I don't know if either of you are higher than 48, but I got Rolling Stone on my side.
I doubt it.
I doubt it.
Oh, wow. Well, let's throw it over to you then, Jennifer. That was a very that was a very confident response. Well, no, now.
Okay, so yes. Okay, where do I start? Start with what I chose. So I chose The Way We Were by Barbara Streisand. Argument done.
That's fair.
I rest my case.
Wow.
Okay, okay. Now, much like Josh, I'm going to say, okay, just, you know, don't just look at the cheesy side of this. Think about how wonderful and beautiful this song is. The song, which is the title song from also the movie, The Way We Were. Amazing movie. If you haven't seen it, you must see it. It is a bittersweet love story of two very strong, independent people who fall in love and despite their love, just can't make it work. And that, I think, is a very, you know, the first time I saw this when I was much younger, I thought, oh, you know, okay, I'm told it's sad, so I get it's sad. It wasn't until years later that I had some life experiences and realized that it's tragic. It's just, you know, that time, that moment you realize in life that just wanting something or loving something isn't enough. And, you know, the mature adult thing is to do is to step aside. And so that part of it, I thought was, you know, very, very sweet, bittersweet. Again, like me, some sad stuff. But also the thing that I love about this song is that it reminds us that not all, you know, not all things in our past that end badly are bad. But also we tend to romanticize about our past in ways that we sometimes think they were better than they were, or maybe they weren't as good as they were. So it's just that, you know, are we tricking ourselves, or, you know, is this just what we do to comfort ourselves?
Memories like the corners of my mind, misty watercolor memories of the way we were. Scattered pictures.
I can only say to the listeners, not being able to be here to watch Candace and Jennifer experience this song, you're really missing out.
Together for the first time.
I know.
That was intense.
Her voice is just so pure. So full of feeling and emotion. She just breathes so much feeling into every single line. And you just, you ache, you know, you feel every word in it. And it's just, you know, I guess my favorite part is, you know, the can it be that it was all so simple then, or has time rewritten every line? If we had the chance to do it all again, tell me, would we? Could we? And it's just so beautiful. So a little more history. Came out in 73, won the Grammy for Best Song in 75. It was written by Alan and Marilyn Bergman with the composer Marvin Hamlisch. Incredible. It pretty much did every movie from 70s, 80s, and beyond, and it's just absolutely stunning.
So it's interesting. That's an interesting pick, actually, because the three of us, and we'll get to Candace's in a sec, or Candace and Ed's, the rest of us did singer-songwriter songs,
mm-hmm.
and you're the only one that went with like a big, heavy-hitting songwriter.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
Marvin Hamlisch. Like, yes. He wrote the 70s,
and yeah. And the Bergmans wrote so many things. This song also won an Oscar.
It did.
Yes, it did.
So
yeah.
There you go.
You're the only one that won an Oscar. Interesting. All right.
I don't have to bring out charts or anything, you know, but it's just...
I don't have any paperwork to back that.
It's just so beautiful. And, yeah.
Well, you know, The Way We Were is a pretty great pick. That was on my short list of songs to talk about, mm-hmm. Because I do think it's such a beautifully written song, and it's so... Well, it also came out at a time where there were a lot of kind of yuppie culture looking back at when things, quote unquote, made sense to them. And so it definitely was applicable to the moment in which it was released. And it's Barbara Streisand. I mean, yeah. She's truly one of our greatest vocalists. But this is a songwriting competition, so
I stand by the song.
Absolutely.
The melody, yes, starts off a little, you know, definitely a little cheesy. Would have had it in the cheesy listening section of, you know, the record store I used to work at. But that said, I think, I mean, you could re-record this now, and every lyric would be just as applicable right now. Think about how many people are on Facebook reconnecting with their second grade girlfriends because they want to go back when, you know, things were simpler. Things made sense. They were more carefree and happy.
That's pretty great. Candace, I can tell that you love this song. What are your thoughts on The Way We Were?
Well, like I said earlier, I think Jennifer's sneaky. I think she knows how much I love Barbara Streisand. And she was like, oh, this is the way to go. Make her question her own choices. I do love the song. I question... it's such a big deal because of the movie. So yes. I do question, without the movie's influence, well, A, the song wouldn't have been written, but mm-hmm. You know, B, would the song have been such a big deal if people didn't hear the song? I mean, the movie was this heavy emotional thing. So if that hadn't happened, would the song have been a big deal if people didn't attach it to the movie mm-hmm. in their heads?
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, I think you're right. I think that it does rely on the emotional attachment to the film. And maybe this is just a simplified telling of their tale, and the two together are, you know, just amazing. But I still think it's pretty solid on its own.
It's a great choice. I feel really good about it, and she's a jerk. I do think it's funny that Josh and Jen both chose songs from almost the exact same.
It's very true. That's actually close. True.
We're emotionally on the same, you know, in the same place, the same decade.
Also, you guys both went, Candy, you and Ed both went recent. And so I was trying to go at least a little old school. Yeah. Ed, you said you've never heard this song before?
If I have, I don't recall it. I certainly don't remember it from any reality show that I've seen. If I have heard it, it was like, and it's a not never intentionally.
Yes, and to the listeners, if you don't know this about Ed, any music that's like pre-Britney Spears' first album, if it wasn't performed on American Idol, that's pretty much like where your background comes from, Ed, like as far as like musical history, is songs that were covered on reality shows.
That's why people are like always are surprised that I know about Motown so well, but Motown's like on every reality show ever. Mm-hmm.
It is,
like,
yeah, totally.
Oh, yeah.
I understand in these like various like specific genres that like to be covered a lot on reality shows, but like something like this is not something that's gonna. The song. There you go. But I respect your choice.
Well, it's also one of those things that, you know, they always say, or they used to say in American Idol, you don't take on Whitney and you don't take on.
You don't take on Whitney and you don't take on
was it Mariah?
Mariah, yeah, that was the other one.
And
even though people do I Have Nothing every 20 minutes.
They both had Whitney Houston Weeks and Mariah Carey.
Yeah, exactly.
American Idol.
But it's like who could take on Babs? I mean Lea Michele did it very well.
She did her very well.
I'm surprised this wasn't on Glee. I'm gonna say that.
Yeah. I just, before we move on to you, Ed, I just have one, what I feel, as much as I love this song, the main reason this song can't win this week, My main argument about against this song this week is going to be Misty Watercolor Memories. It's such a dippy lyric.
Oh, come
it's
on.
It's so dippy.
You know, excuse me, Bridge Over Troubled Waters guy. I don't know that that's necessarily fair.
Okay. They are misty and watercolored because she's looking at the pictures of them and the tears are just falling from her cheeks and they're dripping and they're making these misty watercolor memories right in front of her.
Okay, that's pretty good. That's real good, actually. I'm super impressed by that.
Thank you. All right, well played.
Ed.
I got the cheese down.
We go to you, Ed, for your pick. What is your favorite Grammy winner for Song of the Year?
My favorite, but it's the one I chose. And the one I chose was Daughters by John Mayer, which won in 2005. And I had like some second song, but I said at the beginning when we first discussed the theme, and I was like, well, I'm committed to this, so that's fine. And I spent some time looking at the lyrics, and I don't know if there's like some kind of theme. Feel free to psychoanalyze me right now, but this it has the protagonist in this story is this girl who is affected by her father leaving her when she was younger, and you see that sin is the same she's been standing in since the day she saw him walking away, and now and like she's carried that burden of that father leaving her in her youth for her entire life, assuming that all men are like this. And I'm like, next week, the problem, this is 2 weeks in a row, and hopefully we'll be a little bit more upbeat. But I genuinely do like this song, and I remember, the reason I picked it right off the bat when we decided that Song of the Year is I remember being so happy when I was watching the Grammys in 2005 that Daughters had won. I'm like, it deserves it. So like I've held on to that memory for 12 years, okay. I enjoy the song, and I think it's deserving of Song of the Year, and I think as just a song by itself, I think it will stand the test of time.
I know a girl. She puts the color inside of my world, but she's just like a maze where all of the walls are continually changed. And I've done all I can to stand on the steps with my heart in my hand. Now I'm starting to see maybe it's got nothing to do with me. Fathers, be good to your daughters. Daughters will love like you do. Girls, become lovers who turn into mothers. So mothers, be good to your daughters.
So my favorite story of John Mayer's Daughters is the press conference after they won Song of the Year. And the first thing he says is, I still don't think it was the right single. And
I do recall that as well.
And I have a very important question for you, John Mayer. Overrated, underrated, or correctly rated?
To who?
John Mayer. To the world.
Oh,
our societal reception.
He's overrated, but this song is solid.
That's so interesting. I think he's so underrated. I think he's so much better than he gets credit for.
I actually, if I hadn't seen him perform live and been astounded at like how just what an incredible musician he is live, which is different from his recorded, you know, his studio produced recorded albums. I agree with Josh. I think he's underrated. Like I think he's shortchanged by his.
Maybe that's what I'm missing.
Or at least was shortchanged by his label, because I think he was so much more of a solid musician.
He was boxed into that singer-songwriter of the time, mm-hmm. perfect equation. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, and they sound like this, and it's lovely. It's absolutely lovely. But Ed, I am. Yeah, you. once again, you have such a very specific storytelling song, which I think is interesting, like you did last week.
Now, Candace, what are your thoughts on John Mayer's Daughters?
I have mixed feelings about it. I do think it's beautiful. I think it's, you know, lyrically and melodically beautiful. I have an issue with the story. Then again, my parents are divorced, and there might be a real specific reason I have a bias to the overall message of the song. There's something about it that's a little, like, not feminist to me, and something about it that's a little like, hey, all these girls are damaged, so be good because you might make one mistake and now women are screwed up forever. But I do think that's a skewed viewpoint. That's all I have.
Jennifer, thoughts on John? Oh, go ahead, Ed. Go ahead.
I mean, I can't disagree with Candy about her point. I see what she's saying, but I really feel like there's I feel like the intention of the song is a little bit better than maybe the execution, and I like to think that 2005 Ed was like in key with John Mayer's intentions, which 17 to say, don't listen to what they say, listen to what's in their hearts. But I mean, let's take it while we can.
Yeah. Jennifer, any thoughts on John Mayer's Daughters?
I actually forgot. God, I mean, I knew the song right away when you mentioned it, Ed, but I it's been a very long time since I've actually just sat and listened to it. And it's lovely. It's you know, a very sweet, pleasing song.
It is. For me, it's a little saccharine. I am looking for a little bit of teeth on it for whatever reason. I really like John Mayer. I'm kind of a John Mayer apologist, to be quite honest. And so I was really impressed that you brought that, Ed. That's so not where I would have thought you would go, or anyone would go, quite frankly, considering how society views John Mayer, or what the societal opinion is of him at the moment. We did see him live. He was a fantastic live performer. He put on a really fun show. He's a fantastic musician who's just, I feel like, never quite found the he got like too pigeonholed too early, and then has never really been able to find another niche to go down, where I think at the end of the day, John Mayer's like a great blues guitarist trapped inside of a pretty white dude who therefore has to make pretty white dude music. And you know, there's more than enough Shawn Mendeses in the world to make that a nightmare. So we don't need John Mayer to fill that spot. But at the time, there was nobody filling that spot. And that first Michael McDonald record is pretty catchy. And yeah, Your Body's a Wonderland is cheesy as crap. But the first time you heard that, we all thought that was pretty sweet.
I remember No Such Thing was like my jam at one point.
No Such Thing's a great song.
I don't know. I'm not a John Mayer apologist, or even, I don't even know if I listened to all of his albums entirely. In fact, I think I tried listening to a few of his albums and I just found them like a John Mayer greatest hits. I would be all over that, and I'm genuinely excited. He just announced that in 2017 he's going to be releasing 4 songs a month from his new album, which like Everything in Time or something that affects. So it's gonna be a 48 track album. Holy and the crap. First 4 songs come out like in 2 days.
That's a lot of music. Wow.
That is a lot of music.
Well, that is Ed's pick this week, John Mayer's Daughters. And so we come last but not least to our guest, who gets the privilege of going last, because as Ed mentioned earlier, approximately 15%.
She has a 20%. 20%. Because there's 4 of us. It's 5% per spot.
Oh, so 20% bump going last.
Oh, which you means are welcome.
Jam.
Here
Thanks,
you
guys.
Go.
Yeah.
So turning it over to you, Candace. What did you bring for the Song of the Year battle?
I chose it won in 2002. This is Fallen by Alicia Keys, which was actually released in 2001. Sometimes I feel good, at times I feel when we you told me what the topic was, I went through the list of Grammy, you know, whatever, and immediately chose this the second I saw it. I didn't even think about it. Mm-hmm. This is from her debut album, Songs in A Minor. This was the lead single on that album. She came out of nowhere, and I feel like blew the entire manufactured pop motion of the time right out of the water real fast with like 9 words. That a cappella beginning is just so strong and so, and it grabs you immediately. And I remember hearing that song on the radio and being like, whoa, wait, wait a second. Immediately bought the album, have listened to or purchased every album she's dropped since then. I think she's amazing.
I agree. I mean, I forget how much I love her voice until I, you know, again, stop and listen. It's not just background. I'm not just, you know, catching a little bit of it, but just sitting there, sitting here and listening to it again. It's like she, her range, and I guess it didn't dawn on me that I was the only one who didn't choose a singer songwriter. Like I just did a performer and then other people who wrote an amazing song. But yeah, and like her playing the piano and. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's funny. Impressive. Ed, actually, he said earlier about Bridge Over Troubled Water, the simplicity and the resonance. And that's exactly how I feel about this song. It's simple. It's mm-hmm. everybody gets it. Everybody mm-hmm. has been in love. You could be 10 years old. You could be 50 years old. And you get mm-hmm. what she's talking about.
Yeah. It's a very dynamic song, too.
It's I have a tough time with this song, I'll be honest, because well, a couple of reasons. One, when this song came out, it was on the radio every 20 minutes.
Oh, well.
It was just so constant. And like, I was working in a kitchen at the time at an Italian restaurant, and they had a radio, and every 20 minutes you would just hear, the whole kitchen would go silent. And then you would hear, I'm like, oh God, here we go again. It's on again. The good things about this song, I think this is the most street she ever was, and I think it really suits her on this song, and a lot of the stuff on this record has like teeth is a word I use a lot. Mm-hmm. I like that aspect of it. It's funny that you say it was a response to manufactured pop at the time, because like she was so manufactured at the time.
Well, but it was a different sound. It wasn't that another Jessica totally Simpson, true. Christina mm-hmm. Aguilera, Christina Aguilera has one of the most arguably best voices in our lifetime. But there was a package, and Alicia Keys was not part of that package. Like Fiona Apple was not part of that package. I just went there.
Well, yeah. And it is funny that like to prove your point, the song I looked it up at some point, the song that this knocked off the charts was, I think, by S Club 7. So I think it was like, was it like I'll Never Get Over Me Getting Over You, or is that the Escape one? But anyway, it was like one of those S Club 7 songs that you just sounded so dated already.
I've already forgotten who they were.
Yeah. I remember this was on the charts with O-Town, and so
right, I mean it's a murky time in music. Yeah.
But all right, so Alicia Keys is a Fallen. Ed, what are your thoughts on Fallen by Alicia Keys?
In general about Alicia Keys, I've always had like a hit or miss thing with Alicia Keys. But Fallen, just discuss Fallen in specifically. I think it's a solid song choice. And I agree with what you're saying that she was bringing jazz to pop music in her own way. In my mind, when I was like listening to that, I was like, oh, like look at those riffs. Like it felt all back to jazz or Motown in 2001's version of that. And so I think it's a great song choice. I think it's timeless. I was surprised when it was in my head, I kind of put Fallen and Don't Know Why by Norah Jones in the same category, maybe just because they're pianos and they're solo female artists, and they like won back to back, and I found that kind of interesting. And yeah,
that is kind of interesting. Yeah. Actually, Candace, any other arguments for now? The lyrical content of Fallen is pretty straight ahead.
Like, oh, it is. And actually, yeah. I guess at the time she had said something about wanting to sing something that was something young people could understand and be attracted mm-hmm. to, like 12, 13 years old, but very much in the sense of what like little Michael Jackson used to sing about, and how he sang about all these big, huge things, and everybody understood it. Mm-hmm. Young, you know, little kids, adults, whatever. And I think she absolutely did that. I will say that as a lead single on your debut album, to drop something that is so extremely heavily reliant on you being able to hit those notes at every concert, anytime you're on a radio show,
that's a good point.
Is pretty, a lot of chutzpah is necessary for that. And that's part of the reason I think I love it so much.
Now, I wonder, though, to probe deeper into this particular pick, she was never able to duplicate this again. I'll admit, I don't have, This Girl's on Fire was fucking terrible. She couldn't.
If she did duplicate it, it was If I Ain't Got You or No One.
Yes.
If she did.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. But isn't that on the same record?
Nope.
Oh, it was on the, okay.
Older record.
Oh, interesting.
That was later.
That was on the next.
And this song being so definitively early 2000s R&B. Do you feel that this song holds up over time, Candace?
I do. I feel like, I'll tell you, it's for sure in a couple of my Spotify playlists. So I guess that's a yes, at least for me. I do think it holds up. And what actually I think is interesting is all four of our choices are songs that I knew the melody. I could hear it in my head the second I read what our choices were. So I think we all chose something that's has stood the test of time.
Yes, I've had many of these songs looping through my head, and I found myself humming them at work. So I think that is a good sign.
That's a very good sign. Well, I think that's all we have to say. We'll go around the table, and we'll let everybody make one last final case where we take the gloves off and we explain to everyone why our song is the best and everybody else's songs weren't the song of the year or any year. For that matter, I went first, and I'm going to stick up for Bridge Over Troubled Waters, because if you don't vote for it, my mom's going to cry. She's going to cry super hard. No, because she loves me, and I'm her special gem.
I met your mom. She cries all the time anyhow.
I'm going to go back with Bridge Over Troubled Waters, and I'm just going to say, Bridge Over Troubled Waters has a dynamism that I don't think any of these songs have. I love Daughters, but I feel like Daughters pretty much, from the beginning to the end, it's pretty much one note. I love The Way We Were, but I think that, it never really explodes. Bridge Over Troubled Waters hits such a crescendo at the end of that song from a compositional standpoint. I mean, starting with a simple piano riff and never deviating from that riff. However, building a wall of sound, to use the Phil Spector term, which is what they were trying to create in the studio, building the wall of sound over the course of that song. I love the looks I'm getting from Candace right now. She's so just like, I'm going to murder you with this pen. And so I think that Bridge Over Troubled Waters wins just by sheer force of energy and emotion, and the climax that it reaches at the end of the song makes it one of a kind. And so that is why I am making my claim for Bridge Over Troubled Waters. Jennifer, tell us one last time why the listeners should pick The Way We Were by Barbra Streisand.
Barbara, mother effin'. Streisand. That is why. No, I take that back. Yes, her voice, her heart, her soul, every ounce of emotion in her body comes out in that song. And again, I do feel that we find ourselves at some points in our lives where we wonder, was it better than, would you change things if you could, to make that one thing different and then give up what you have now? And it's just, I think it's a beautiful, timeless song, just wrought with emotion and all the feels.
And one thing I will say, though, is I would say of the four songs that were presented here, The Way We Were does feel like it could be recorded in any decade at any time. So timeless is the word. Ed, if you would like to take one last attempt to prevail on the audience to vote for John Mayer's Daughters, do you think it's timeless? Why should they vote for John Mayer's Daughters?
Quick aside. I'll do that after this. but okay, Daughters, I think, really maximizes the lyrical content, even from the beginning with "She's just like a maze where all of her walls all continually change." That's like a beautiful image and a lovely thing. And then you have, he realizes that maybe it's got nothing to do with me. I don't know. I feel like the lyrics are on point, and I guess it is timeless. I feel like maybe not any time ever. Well, I think played at any time. I don't know if it could be a hit at any time, but at any time it could be, it could resonate with people. If it's played at a grocery store or an elevator, wherever one is listening to John Mayer classics, that you'll if you're listening to the lyrics of the song enough.
I do, and like that like that great. You're like any for it's to serve all of your John Mayer needs. John Mayer's daughters here to deliver comes with the business card. Candace, one last time to prevail on the listeners that Alicia Keys' "Fallen" is the best song.
Am I allowed to make comments on the other?
You are
choices?
Absolutely. The all gloves right, are so off, yo.
In closing. "Bridge Over Troubled Waters," a little too boring. Nice, but a little boring. "Daughters," a little creepy. I'm sorry, a little creepy. "The Way We Were," beautiful, a little too sappy. However, "Fallen." is absolutely simply about love. Everybody understands it. Every human can relate to it at any age and any demographic. Paired with her voice, I think that it is clearly the winner.
Wow. Well, some very strong words from the panel tonight on the songs of the year. And now, dear listeners, it is time for you to vote for which of our songs is the best song of the year, songs that won Song of the Year at the Grammys that you heard this week. You can vote on Twitter by tweeting to us at BeatdownPod. You can email us at BeatdownPodcast@gmail.com. Or you can tell us on Facebook at Facebook.com/BeatdownPodcast and let us know what you think is the ultimate song of the year. And it goes without saying, I'm sure you're going to want us to tell us all the songs we forgot. Ed, I'm going to ask you for some thoughts on this year's Song of the Year competition.
I will. But as a quick aside, if everyone listening could do us a favor and review us on iTunes, that'd be super awesome.
Of course.
Okay. Yes. just throwing that out there. Called "I Need a CTA." So the Song of the Year nominees for this year are "Formation" by Beyonce, "Hello" by Adele, "I Took a Pill in Ibiza" by Mike Posner, "Love Yourself" by Justin Bieber, and "7 Years" by Lucas Graham. And while clearly at least one of these songs shouldn't be there, "7 Years."
God, that's the dumbest song. That is such a terrible song.
Four solid songs. And I think "Hello" is not the rolling in the deep that Adele wants. I'm making the case. It's probably.
You broke up there. What'd you say?
Entry, but I'm storytelling aspect of things, and "I Took a Pill in Ibiza," I feel, has a strong story about culture and involving what happens with. When you have a career and it blows up in your face and like how you recover from that. And I feel like it's a very authentic Mike Posner song. I feel like I've said this multiple times to people that this is the best Mike Posner you're ever going to get in the history of ever. So if he can't win for this song, he's not going to win, which I'm sure to Josh would say, maybe he doesn't deserve Song of the Year. And that might be true, but I think "I Took a Pill in Ibiza" deserves it.
That's funny because that's exactly what I say. I think that song is terrible. Candace, do you have any thoughts on the on this year's Song of the Year nominees?
I don't because I'm not hip with what's happening right now. Okay. Ever. I try and I'm just so far removed for no reason other than I'm getting up there in age, I think.
Jennifer?
Well, I think part of the reason that, I mean, not, I don't discount our ages here. I think it's just the way we listen to music and,
true,
you know, streaming music that you choose versus, you know, the way we used to is like you heard the same 10 songs play every hour on
usually
the hour.
Usually "Fallen."
And you fell in love with them by repetition. And I love Beyonce. Without really even knowing anything else about the other ones, I just, you know, Queen Bee,
I would see if it was a different Lemonade track, I would be more on that side. That is like if this was If this was Don't Hurt Yourself, I wouldn't even be talking right now about the song that I'm defending.
That's funny because right. That's my favorite song on Lemonade too. And I think that's, I haven't met anybody else for whom that's their favorite song on that record. Most people I think seem to like want Get Up or.
Don't Hurt Yourself. And then you go Daddy Lessons. Yeah. That's your top two, Lemonade.
I'm gonna make a note on the calendar. Josh and Ed agreed on.
We
a
agreed.
Song.
Ed, I'm sending you a virtual high five. We will be back next week where our theme will be songs from the TV show Glee. Hopefully you guys will listen to that episode. It will be very fun. If you didn't know, Jen and Ed. Jen and Ed and I hosted a Glee podcast for many years, and so we know all the things. So we're going to have lots to say next week. We'll be joined by listener Sammy. If you were a gleeful listener, you might remember listener Sammy. She will join us on the show next week. But before we go, Jennifer, people want to find you on the social medias. Mm-hmm. How would they do that?
I'm at Jenny B Creative, kind of all over the place.
Ed, where would people go to follow you?
At Edward Giordano at pretty much everywhere. And I just discovered this past week the card game Coup, and it is my current obsession.
That is very fun. That's a fun game.
I'm taxing for three. Oh, I'm also Duke. That's so convenient. Carry on.
Candace, if people would like to follow you on the social medias, where would they look?
You can find me at Candy Presents. That's Candy with an I pretty much everywhere.
All right.
Minus Snapchat, because I don't understand Snapchat. I tried. Yeah. Everywhere else.
Ed will send me Snapchat sometimes, and I'll be like,
oh, they're super fun.
That's a thing. And you can find me on Twitter at Josh Brunell for Josh and Ed and Candace. This has been a Beatdown. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Beatdown is a production of Us and is recorded in Studio O, office attached to our garage. Our theme song is Optimism by the Numbers by Brian Lerner and used with his wine-addled permission. If you enjoyed this podcast, leave a review on iTunes. The music clips we discuss in this podcast are used in compliance with the U.S. Copyright Act Fair Use Exemption for criticism and commentary. If you want to listen to the songs we talked about this week in their entirety, visit us on Twitter at BeatdownPod, online at BeatdownPodcast.com, and Facebook at Facebook.com/BeatdownPodcast.